I'm Dave Jackson, cryptocurrency and blockchain editorial writer here at StockHouse.com. This is our premier podcast, and our mission going forward is to help listeners and investors navigate the sometimes murky waters of blockchain technology and digital currency. Today, we're fortunate to be joined by one of the industry's most respected names, Alex Tapscott. Alex is a globally recognized writer, speaker, investor, and advisor focused on the impact of emerging digital technologies like blockchain and cryptocurrencies and how they affect business, society, and government. He's also the co-founder of the Blockchain Research Institute, a multi-million dollar think tank that's investigating blockchain strategies, opportunities, and use cases. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
My pleasure.
So, Alex, simply put, what is the blockchain and where did it come from?
Yeah, so blockchain is the technology that enables cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but it's actually representative of something much more profound, and that's a second era of the internet. So let me explain what I mean by that. For 20 years, we've had the Internet of Information. It's been a powerful tool that's changed how we communicate and how we share information, but it actually hasn't had as big an impact on commerce or on markets as a lot of people maybe hoped. And that's because when you use the internet to send something, you're not sending an original, unique thing. You're sending a copy, which is okay if it's an email or it's a PDF, but it's not so great if it's money or stocks, because if you could sell the same share over and over again or send the same dollar over and over again, then those assets become worthless. And as a result, even though the internet had a very generally positive impact, a lot of the value is captured asymmetrically by intermediaries, banks, governments, but increasingly new kinds of intermediaries like social media companies and digital conglomerates like Google. And what blockchain represents is a new internet, the internet of value. So what makes Bitcoin possible can be used for virtually any other kind of asset. So we can move, store, and manage anything in the economy peer-to-peer in a frictionless, trustless way without an intermediary. So what works for Bitcoin can work for stocks, for bonds, titles, deeds, futures, forwards, digital identity, scientific discoveries, music, art, film, even votes in an election. And that's a very profound shift in how we think about organizing capability in the economy. And it's going to have a profound impact on every industry. And it's also, by the way, creating whole new asset classes of digital assets, which create challenges and opportunities for business builders, entrepreneurs, and investors alike.
Okay, that sounds great. Now, in the big picture, does anyone truly understand how blockchain really works? And what's driving the hype right now?
Yeah, I mean, of course, people understand how it works. In fact, it's understanding how it works that gives people so much confidence. So I'll use the example of Bitcoin, for example. So, you know, people think of Bitcoin as this money that people use to buy drugs and guns and all this kind of stuff. But it's actually much simpler than that. Bitcoin was designed to be cash for the internet. So in the same way that when you go to the store and you hand the clerk $5 for, you know, coffee and a donut, they're not looking at your driver's license. You're not using the Visa network. It's a peer-to-peer transaction because cash is a bearer instrument. And so the developers and founders of Bitcoin were trying to create a version of cash for the internet. And what was so amazing about it is that it worked. And it worked so well that it's created this hype and this speculation about what else this technology could do. But at its core, blockchain is just a ledger. It's a recording of all transactions that have happened in a native asset on a distributed network. And the reason that people have confidence that when they send one Bitcoin and the other person receives it is that there's an entry into that ledger. And instead of that ledger existing inside of a bank or a government or some centralized intermediary that you have to trust, it exists on every computer that's connected to the internet, and it's available for all to see. And no single person can alter the record. You'd have to overcome the entire network, which would be about as difficult as marshaling all the power in the sun. So practically speaking, the blockchain as a technology for storing and recording information about value is better than anything that we've ever developed. And the other reason that people have confidence is that the number of Bitcoin is programmed into the source code so that it can never be changed. And so everyone can have confidence that there's only going to be a fixed number of Bitcoin. So whereas central bank money can be printed and generated through quantitative easing, Bitcoin is much more akin to gold. There's a fixed supply, in the ground of gold. There's a fixed supply of Bitcoin. There's a certain demand for the asset. And the more demand there is with a fixed supply, the greater the price will increase. But Bitcoin is really just the beginning. To continue on the internet analogy, you can think of Bitcoin basically as the first killer application of the blockchain, in the same way that email was the first killer application of the internet. But since then, we've seen new types of technologies emerging that do far more than just enable a digital currency. Profound as that is, they do much more. They're enabling the transformation of many different asset classes and many different industries, including financial services and venture capital.
Well, fair enough. In fact, that's a great segue into my next question, which is, well, why should blockchain be considered a trusted medium of currency exchange and a sound investment strategy in relation to what you just mentioned with gold?
Okay, so a couple of points on that. It can be trusted in the sense that you can trust that when you have a Bitcoin, nobody else has it. So if you had a file, like a PDF or a Word document, someone else might have a copy of that. And so if that copy, if they claim that copy was money, then, you know, it'd be very difficult for you to claim otherwise. The difference with cryptocurrencies and digital assets is that only one of any one of them can exist at any point in time, and you are the custodian. And because you know that there's a fixed supply, and because you know trust is distributed across the network, you know that no single bad actor or no corrupt intermediary or no greedy banker or no government can basically take your funds or corrupt the network. So you can trust that the system works. However, I'm not suggesting that you can trust that the price is always going to go up. In fact, Bitcoin is an incredibly volatile asset, as are most other crypto assets. And if you're going to be an investor in the space, it's not enough to just know that the technology works. You also have to understand it. And you have to understand what it is that you're buying. Because in the end, these are representations in a way of a new technology that could be massively transformational, but it's also very early stage. And we've seen in previous cycles when there are lots of exciting opportunities getting value, very, very high multiples, that sometimes it works out, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and sometimes it doesn't. Pets.com, America Online and others. So like any kind of asset class, it may be different in how it works, but it shouldn't change the due diligence and the fundamental analysis that any thoughtful investor should do before entering into a trade.
Okay, gotcha. Right now, what companies that you see out there taking the lead on developing blockchain, and what are the possible business applications?
That's a great question. And I think that there's two ways to answer that. So for one, yeah, there are lots of big companies that are doing tons of stuff in the space. And some of them would be coming as no surprise. So like JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America on the financial side, on the technology side, Amazon through Amazon Web Services, IBM, Microsoft, et cetera. So, you know, companies that are either very big and sophisticated in the financial world or very big and sophisticated in the technology world. But actually, I think most of the innovation today is happening outside of big companies. It's happening at the grassroots and in communities, and it's happening with entrepreneurs and their startups. And that's because basically blockchain has enabled this killer application that has changed the way companies raise money. It's called the ICO. And ICO stands for initial coin offering, which is a bit of a misnomer because they're not coins in the sense that they're cryptocurrencies. They're not supposed to be mediums of exchange. They're tokens that represent value in something or access to something. And that's allowed companies to raise profound amounts of money. So I'll give you an example. 2016, the amount of money raised through ICOs was $165 million, which is kind of interesting, but it's not really, you know, moving the needle per se. I don't think Goldman Sachs sees that and starts to get worried. But last year in 2017, companies raised at least $6 billion from 165 million. And through the first quarter of this year, they've raised more than that. So all of a sudden, more money is being raised for blockchain startups through token sales than is being raised for internet companies through traditional venture capital. And what it means is that if you're an entrepreneur, regardless of where you are in the world, you can tap into a global pool of capital and raise money and build value. Now, this runs against all sorts of difficult challenges, the conventions of the way the industry works today, the incumbents themselves, and obviously the regulations. And these are challenges that need to be addressed. But what I look at with these kinds of new technologies is that Is it a reason that it shouldn't be done, or is it an opportunity challenge? A challenge that needs to be overcome. And I think in this case, it's a challenge that needs to be overcome. So you talked about use cases. So venture capital as a funding tool is actually the industry that's been transformed the most and the most quickly by this, as has payments through the introduction of cryptocurrency. So in Venezuela, for example, where trust in the Bolivar is collapsing, the government issued its own cryptocurrency called the Petro, but people don't use it. They actually use Bitcoin because they trust something that's not controlled by government more than they trust something that is controlled by government. But this technology can be applied to basically any industry in the economy. So think about supply chains, for example. So supply chain fraud is a $600 billion a year problem. It takes many forms. It could be that goods don't arrive on time. They arrive incomplete. They're fraudulent. Taxes haven't been paid. People haven't claimed the rightful ownership, et cetera. So what does it mean when you have a distributed ledger of transactions where you can basically trace and track an asset from its origin point, let's say on the factory floor in China or in the mine in Africa, all the way to the storefront? You'd be able to reduce the friction and fraud in that supply chain because everyone's working off of a common source of truth. How about the creative industries like music and publishing? So songs are already digital. Why can't you program into them some business logic? So every time a song is consumed, it's listened to, let's say on Spotify, a streaming service, or on iTunes, it creates a micropayment that gets split and allocated to the people who own the rights. So artists would go from being paid last, if at all, to being paid first and being paid fairly. You can apply this to accounting. Again, a distributed ledger of transactions would be a record of truth about an organization. You wouldn't have to, do quarterly audits or monthly audits. You wouldn't have to analyze the financials with the cycles of the moon. You'd be able to see a real-time picture of the financial health of a company. And that would, I think, reduce fraud and reduce the risk of moral hazard and human error. So I could go on, but the point is that there's lots of different industries where this technology can apply, both the assets themselves that are being created, but also how the underlying technology can transform business logic.
Oh, that's great. Now, another big question, is blockchain really going to change the world of internet transactions? And if so, how is it going to do it?
Yeah, I think it will in a few ways. So first of all, it already has through Bitcoin. And I know people, not everybody uses Bitcoin, but tens of millions of people do. And the Bitcoin network stores hundreds of billions of dollars of value. And it's used daily to move billions of dollars around the world for lots of legitimate, illegitimate purposes. Doesn't really matter. The point is that it works. But what you're going to see increasingly are the creation of new kinds of payment rails that are built using blockchain. And that could mean building on top of the Bitcoin network, or it could mean building your own blockchain technology. The way it works today is we talk about the market for cross-border payments because it takes days to move money across a border and can toss 10%. But it's kind of an odd concept of cross-border payment. When was the last time you sent a cross-border email? It doesn't really exist, right? So information on the internet flows like water, but value takes days to settle and clear and goes through many intermediaries. So the ability to move value peer-to-peer is basically going to put many of the intermediaries that make up the global payment system, from SWIFT to MoneyGram to Western Union to many operations within banks, and it's going to make them obsolete. And that's going to reduce the friction. It's going to put money into the hands of people who need it the most. $600 billion of value flows from places like Canada and the US and Europe into the global south and the developing world through remittances, people sending money home to their families overseas. And the average fees those people pay is about 10%. So that's $60 billion tax on the economy and on the poorest people and the ones who need it the most. So to say we're going to put $60 billion into the hands of, people who need it the most, yeah, I think that's pretty transformational.
Okay, now can you give our investors and audience a little walkthrough by helping name the type of businesses and organizations that can benefit from using blockchain technology?
Sure. Well, I think that, a lot of banks are going to be disrupted by this technology. Whether or not they embrace it is really their decision. So I think that a lot of, banks that are in the capital market side of the business, like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, I think could benefit. And I think others that are focused primarily on moving and storing value and commercial lending and the like, I think could be disrupted. In terms of investing or looking for investment opportunities, what we're seeing here, and I'm not here to provide investment advice, but I think this is an important point, which is that What's happening with the creation of blockchain is the, also the simultaneous creation of an entirely new asset class that has at least seven different types. So I'm not going to cover them all in detail, but basically I'm going to list them off and I'm going to explain some examples of them. So the first are cryptocurrencies, and these are designed to be a medium of exchange. Bitcoin is the biggest of them, but there are other ones like Zcash and Dash and Monero and others. The second category are platforms. So the one that your listeners might be familiar with is a thing called Ethereum. So Ethereum doesn't compete with Bitcoin. Ethereum is actually a complement to Bitcoin. The way Ethereum works is that you can run on top of the Ethereum network decentralized applications. So basically applications that don't require an intermediary to move and store value and to work, essentially. And every time you use one of those apps, you have to pay with a little bit of Ether. So the more applications that get built on the Ethereum network, the more valuable Ether in the Ethereum network becomes. And the Ethereum network, which started, by the way, as a science experiment by a 20-year-old University of Waterloo dropout in Ontario, Canada, is now worth over $50 billion and is used by dozens of Fortune 500 companies. So I think that the platforms like Ethereum and others like Cosmos and Aon and others, and I encourage your listeners to look this stuff up, are incredibly interesting. And the reason they're interesting is because owning Ether is kind of like owning a piece of the internet in 1993, except in 1993, you couldn't own the internet. The internet was a free utility. So all the value was captured by companies that built on top of it, like Amazon and Google and others. But this time it's different. This time you can participate at the ground floor in the creation of the foundational technology for the new internet. And to me, that's super exciting. The third category are utility tokens for applications that run on top of these networks. So these are companies that are trying to tackle lots of different industries. So I'll give you an example. One's called Golem. It's a distributed file storage system. So basically, it's trying to marshal all the computing power of all the smartphones in the world into one giant global cloud. So you don't have to use Amazon or IBM or Google or Apple clouds. You can use the cloud that exists all around us. But in order for them to incentivize users to contribute computing power to the network, they need to give them some payment. They pay them in the Golem token. So that token is going to increase in value the more people that use the network. So that's utility tokens. The fourth category are security tokens. And these are basically digital assets that represent what we understand as securities today. So stocks, bonds, you know, futures, forwards, swaps, et cetera. You know, the global crypto asset market today is about $400 billion in size, which is pretty big, but it kind of pales in comparison to the $110 trillion that the global stock market is worth. You know, put another way, the whole crypto market's worth less than half the market cap of Apple, which is one company, right? So we're at the very early stages. And I think increasingly you're going to see lots of companies, instead of going and doing an IPO, they're going to do a direct security token offering and issue their shares on the blockchain. So that's four categories. There are three others that are not as relevant for investors, but I'll cover them quickly. One is called natural asset tokens. So these are tokens that represent ownership of physical assets like gold, oil, air, carbon, water, etc. The next one is crypto collectibles. So these are digital collectibles like playing cards, loyalty points, or assets in virtual worlds. And then the last one are the crypto fiat currencies, currencies basically issued by governments. We've already seen the Venezuelan government attempting this. And I think in 10 years' time, every major central bank in the world will have issued its own cryptocurrency. So the first four categories are the ones that are the most investable. I think that the platform tokens and the security tokens are the most interesting categories today. And I think that the security token space, basically digital stocks and digital bonds, are going to be the fastest growing area in this entire industry.
Okay.
So I hope that's helpful. That's a big sort of dump of information.
It's absolutely, it's information we can all use. And finally, if you were starting out in cryptocurrency investing for the very first time, what would you recommend as a starting point for the novice investor? Without the obvious, don't spend what you're not prepared to lose formula.
Yeah. So advice number one, educate yourself. Do your own homework. Understand what you're buying. It's like anything. Don't get caught up in a hot trend. Don't get, have that fear of missing out. Don't, spend what you can't afford to lose. All that typical stuff. But really, I think the most important thing is to get educated. At the bare minimum, you should be reading the original white paper for Bitcoin, trying to get an understanding of what this technology is, how it works. There's great resources. I wrote a book about this a couple of years ago called Blockchain Revolution, which we're actually re-releasing in June. with two new chapters, a lot of it which covers what I've spoken about today. So I think that's a helpful resource just to get educated. It doesn't provide investment advice, but it should help you to understand the tech. Immerse yourself in what's happening online. Andreessen Horowitz, which is a venture capital firm in the U.S., has an incredible resource, basically a running list of all the best content that's ever come out on this stuff. And, dive in and do some work. And I think when you do, you'll go deeper down the rabbit hole and you realize that, you know, this is about a lot more than cryptocurrency. It's about a lot more than, you know, speculative assets. It's about a new technology that's going to, you know, change the world. And I think it's really exciting. And I think that eventually, voluntarily or not, crypto assets are going to become a big part of everyone's portfolio, because I think that's what all assets are going to be in a few years' time. So whether or not you're betting on Bitcoin or betting on Ether or anything else, you're going to eventually own shares and bonds and funds and everything else that you already own today. It's just going to be enabled by blockchain technology. So whether you act or not, you're going to end up owning this stuff in the end, I think.
Well, it is exciting, and I think that you've done a wonderful job in explaining to our listeners the fundamentals of the investment process in cryptocurrency and just making it that much easier for everyone involved. You've done a fantastic job, and I really appreciate the time that you spent with us. We've been discussing Cryptocurrency 101. We've had a very interesting discussion today with Alex Tapscott. And we hope to connect with you again soon, Alex. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. It was my pleasure.
All righty.